home for every Notre Dame football game.
Goodbye, Brandon Wimbush. 58 yards. Sanders is pulling away with every stride, and he goes in. 92 yards.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, presents.
Race is on. Josh Adams wins it. Touchdown, Notre Dame. 98 yards. 76-yard touchdown play to Equanimeous St. Brown.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Faulkner breaks one tackle down the near sideline, gets a block, cuts back inside. Touchdown, Faulkner and Mishawaka.
York now in front, Ogilvie. They score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four! Gets up and in by Rex Kluger with 1.5 seconds left. Notre Dame leads.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Great to be with you as Budweiser's weekday sports beat comes your way on this Thursday, along with Eric Hansen out at the University of Notre Dame, getting set to cover Brian Kelly's media session. He's the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett, our WSBT radio sports director. We're ready to talk Notre Dame football as the Fighting Irish get set to leave for Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Well, they will take on the Tar Heels of North Carolina Saturday at 3:30 on 96.1 FM WSBT. Our pregame coverage begins at 9 a.m. with the Jack Swarbrick Show, Brian Kelly radio show at 10, 11 a.m. game day with Evan Sharpley. Then the Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat pregame show at noon, kickoff at 3:30, and after the game, Reggie Brooks will join me for the official Notre Dame football postgame show. That's our game day Saturday on 96.1 FM WSBT. Coming up on the program this evening, bottom of this hour, IndyInsider.com recruiting update with Tyler James, the Fighting Irish football recruiting insider for the South Bend Tribune. Also coming up on the program, we will bring you coverage of Brian Kelly's Thursday press conference. Here on 96.1 FM WSBT, we will find out the latest on quarterback Brandon Wimbush, his status for Saturday's game. Will anything be announced by Brian Kelly today? We'll find out in just a little bit. Our opposing press box interview comes your way in about 90 minutes. We'll be joined by Andrew Carter. He is the North Carolina beat reporter for the News and Observer. Had a fun spring covering the Tar Heels basketball team on their way to a national championship. Now covering a 1-4 North Carolina football team. And as I bring in Eric Hansen, who is at the University of Notre Dame, he'll be covering some fun stuff tomorrow. Allegedly, the NCAA will finally come out with a conclusion on the scandal that rocked North Carolina for, I guess, several years. Sounds like there could be some penalties. I can't believe we're going to get to the end of the road with this North Carolina situation, Eric. It's almost unthinkable that the NCAA would want to finish this.
Well, you know, it's ironic that you use those words because in just very recently, they have backstepped on this and decided tomorrow is not going to be the day.
Really? I'd not heard that.
So you will have lots to talk to Andrew Carter about. Andrew actually tweeted that. So the North Carolina Notre Dame crowd, football crowd, will have the full attention at least this weekend. So I'm not sure when it's going to be, but they said that they would give them 24 hours notice.
And you wonder why the FBI walked around the NCAA in their investigation.
It's almost comical.
It is. It really is. You wonder if the NCAA will exist sometime soon, if the Power Five just breaks away and starts their own enterprise and handles the money themselves, something that could happen down the line. We'll have to see. All right, well, we've been following the last couple of days, Eric, the status of Fighting Irish quarterback Brandon Wimbush. We know he has been dealing with a foot injury. He had a boot on his foot as of yesterday. It was supposed to come off yesterday. I know last thing Brian Kelly mentioned during the ACC teleconference was the fact that Brandon should be able to run in practice Wednesday. That was yesterday. So we really don't know what he was able to do in practice, or at least I have not heard. Do you have any insight going into BK's press conference here in the next hour, what he might say?
Well, if Brandon was practicing today, he was practicing the piped-in crowd noise because I can hear it from where I'm parked. And there was a Notre Dame Snapchat account today. There was a, you know, kind of still of Brandon in his uniform. It looked like he had shoulder pads on, but not maybe knee pads. The pads below the waist, it looked like maybe he had shorts with it. But and maybe that's how he dresses on Thursday typically. But at least he was in uniform. We do know that. Now, how much he was doing, we'll find out here about, they say, 5:45 today.
Okay, so Brian Kelly will meet the media. No guarantees he will offer specific information from a strategical standpoint. Possibly he holds on to the information, or maybe he doesn't know at this time. But let me ask you, Eric, I mean, it's Thursday, and practice is going to be wrapping up in a few moments. They have to know who the quarterback is now at this point, right? There's no turning back if Wimbush hasn't been able to practice. It's hard to imagine he's going to be behind center, right?
I think as far as a starter, I think it's too late to change your mind, because I think the team needs to know who the starter's going to be. And I think game time decision, I don't think that's a great, you know, I think that's what you tell the media. I don't think that's what you tell your team. And I'm sure that's what Brian Kelly does. You know, there's a chance that they don't know if Brandon would be available in relief, and then on Friday night or Saturday morning, they kind of say, okay, it looks like if we need him as the backup, he can play. But, you know, I would think tonight, you know, the team would know, and hopefully the media will know. You know, again, maybe he came around. This was a grade one foot strain, according to Brian Kelly, which, again, is the mildest form. And so, you know, Ed Brandon supposedly wants to play, but, you know, we'll know very shortly.
Okay, so we'll wait for Brian Kelly to speak. In the next little bit, we'll bring it to you live on 96.1 FM WSBT. Mike McGlinchey, the Fighting Irish starting left tackle, was a part of the media session last night at the University of Notre Dame and was asked to talk about backup quarterback Ian Book, who could be Notre Dame's starting quarterback Saturday at North Carolina. Here's Mike McGlinchey on Ian Book.
Well, I think it's the same things that we've seen in Ian since he's gotten here. He's a good kid, great player, slings the ball around all over the field, takes a lot of pride in knowing his responsibilities, and has worked very, very, very hard with Coach Tommy Reese and Coach Long and Coach Kelly this week and weeks prior, obviously, to be able to step up when his time comes. And if it is the case that Ian is the starter on Saturday, we're going to have no problems, and he's going to lead us in the same ways that Brandon would, and he's going to do a great job. I think he's a gamer. I think everybody kind of here is. It's just one of those things that practice is hard. You know, you get every look in the book and that you can possibly have against a specific way that you're going to attack it. So it rarely is the game harder than it is in practice. And when the bright lights shine on and there's 80,000 people in the stands, it makes it pretty exciting to just be able to fly around, sling the ball, and do what he's capable of doing. I mean, Ian's here for a reason. He's at the University of Notre Dame to play quarterback, and he's going to do a great job for us if his name's called.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat here on WSBT Radio, brought to you by Budweiser and Sport Clips on WSBT. That was left tackle Mike McGlinchey talking about quarterback Ian Book. Eric, the defensive numbers for North Carolina, not pretty. They have struggled throughout this season. We have documented this team has been crushed by injuries so far this year. 13 players have been lost to injuries so far this season. In the scenario in which Ian Book is the starting quarterback, what can North Carolina fall back on defensively? What are some things that they could do that could cause the Irish offense some trouble?
Well, I think they could get a little bit more aggressive with their pressures. You know, they're not a huge sack team, but in terms of, you know, what they do well defensively, that's one of the better things they do well. Not that they do it well, but that's better than some of the other things. I think, you know, just trying to confuse him and give him a lot of different looks. You know, the problem with that is they haven't been able to stop anybody either with the run or the pass. But my sense is, if I'm the North Carolina defensive coordinator and I think Ian Book is going to play the whole game, that I am going to put my strong safety up at the linebacker level and have him play the run and dare Ian Book to win the game with his arm. And then just try to confuse him with some different looks as well throughout the game. I think that would be the best strategy for a North Carolina team that's the worst pass defense Notre Dame will see this season and is one of the worst run defenses as well.
Well, the good thing for the Fighting Irish, whether it's Wimbush or Book, you've got a pretty good running game to fall back on. The Irish enter this week number 7 in the country in rushing yards at 301 yards per game. Josh Adams is 4th in the country in rushing yards at 658. And here was Mike McGlinchey talking about the running game, Wimbush, Book, all things covered in this conversation.
I don't think it really changes much for us at all. We try to do that each and every day. No matter who's the one carrying the ball, we're trying to open the hole as big as possible and give them as much room to run as we can. And no matter who's back there, no matter if Brandon's back there and he's not 100%, he's going to give it his all. And the blocking adjustments and the pride that we take in opening up holes isn't going to change no matter who's got the ball in their hands.
Well, if Ian Book's the starting quarterback, Eric, it's pretty obvious they are going to try to shut down that Fighting Irish run game and stuff the line of scrimmage. Hey, Boston College tried to do that, Eric, in that game in Chestnut Hill, and the Irish were able to spring some big runs. If you don't make the tackle at the line of scrimmage, there's not a lot of help in the back. But if North Carolina decides to load up, if in fact it is Ian Book as the starting quarterback, there's an opportunity, Eric, for the wide receiving core to get some freedom to possibly make some plays. And I think we feel like that Ian Book is capable of making some of the throws necessary to beat that type of defense. So is there anybody that benefits in the passing game from possibly what North Carolina may do to the Irish?
I would say probably Chase Claypool and maybe certainly Equanimeous. If Equanimeous only has single coverage, mm-hmm. then he's going to chew that up on the close side of the field. Brian Kelly kind of hinted at Chris Fink looking good in the Miami game and maybe that he would start ahead of Cam Smith. I know that Fink probably works a lot with Ian Book, and they look like they have some pretty good chemistry on a long pass in the Miami game, so we'll see. But the other thing kind of to throw in here, Darren, is also when you bring that eighth or ninth player into the box, you're also kind of begging the other team to run their quarterback. Mm-hmm. And Notre Dame, based on Brandon's availability as an emergency backup, that could be kind of ticklish too, running Ian Book, given the fact that your backup now becomes Montgomery, Van Gorder, or Avery Davis, and I am going to try to pin Brian down on that when we get into the press conference here in a few minutes. But, that's kind of a – but going back to your original question, you would think the wide receivers would benefit from that a little bit more, especially, maybe with the ability to get deep and Ian Book throw the deep ball. We haven't seen – a lot of that from him, although the pass to Fink was fairly deep. We just haven't, we didn't see a lot of that spring game, but he was very accurate on the passes that he did throw.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune at the University of Notre Dame, getting set to cover Brian Kelly's media session. I'm Darren Pritchett back in our WSBT studios. Again, our plan is to bring you Brian Kelly's media session live, so you will find out about the status of Brandon Wimbush, if there is an update here on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. And yeah, that was a great throw by Ian Book to Chris Fink. That's really good timing to have that on tape, just in case North Carolina gets a little excited about loading the line of scrimmage, if in fact Ian Book is the starting quarterback on Saturday. Well, the Irish have won 3 in a row. The last time they took the field and lost the football game, it was at Notre Dame Stadium against Georgia, who is still undefeated. It was a 20-19 barn burner. The Irish had the lead late. Georgia scored late, and the Irish unfortunately had a couple of chances to kick a field goal, or I should say get in field goal range to have the chance to kick the field goal. Unfortunately, that never took place. A sack of Brandon Wimbush and ultimately a fumble recovery by Georgia ended that game. But the Irish have won three in a row since that particular performance. And during his ACC teleconference on Wednesday, Brian Kelly was asked to assess his team post-Georgia.
Well, we knew Georgia was a good team coming in. I thought that our football team has grown, however, in many areas. I think, you know, we were, you know, certainly a team that needed to continue to find itself. And we needed to go through some adversity, which we did against Boston College on the road. It was a close game at half. You know, we fumble the ball in the third quarter. We hold them defensively and come back and score a few touchdowns. Michigan State, we have to come out in the second half and prove ourselves on the road. So it's been these challenges that our football team has undertaken that has helped it grow during these last three wins. Yeah, Georgia is certainly a very good football team. We learned a lot about our team that we can compete with anybody that we play. But there's no question the last 3 weeks have been growth for our football team as well.
And I'm thinking back to when I asked you this question earlier in the week, Erica. You've got Georgia in the top five in your AP vote. They continue to look better and better each week.
They do. I have them at number three. And, you know, the interesting wrinkle for them is Jacob Eason is healthy now, the guy that originally started at quarterback for them in game one. But Jake Fromm has played so well that you kind of wonder, you know, what's Kirby Smart going to do with that? He tried to kind of say that there was open competition this week. But my sense is they'll stick with Jake Fromm. I think things are working great. You don't want to kind of rattle that right now. They're on a roll. And so I wouldn't mess with success if I were Kirby Smart.
Eric, do you think that Georgia game, even though it was a loss, has helped this football team understand who they are offensively? Because the offensive numbers since that game have been off the chart. Now the competition level from Georgia to the other three, hey, no doubt there is a difference, but Georgia is one of the elite defenses in college football. Do you think Georgia helped Notre Dame figure out and understand who they were offensively, and Notre Dame has taken advantage of that knowledge over the last few weeks, or is it more about the competition?
Well, I think some of it's the competition, but I think some of it is that they saw what their weaknesses were and they said, okay, let's work on that. They didn't abandon the run at that point. They actually emphasized it even more and they said, okay, we're going to kind of exert our will here. Now, they also know that they have to be balanced against certain teams. There are certain teams on their schedule that they can run on no matter how many people they put in the box. And there's other teams where they're not going to be able to do that. And they have some of those teams coming up. And I'm not sure that USC necessarily is a team that they can't run on, but I do think NC State, Miami, and Wake are three teams where they better be balanced or they're not going to win those games. But certainly their personality, their team personality, physicality has maintained since the Georgia game. And I think it also gave their defense a little bit of identity. That was the defense's best game, was the Georgia game, I think. Given the fact that they forced 7 three and outs, they've only forced 16 this season, and 7 came in that game, and they did it in sudden change. They did it when they had to get the offense the ball back at the end. So I think there were some good things that came out of that Georgia game, and they need to continue to build on those things.
Eric, one more question before we move along. We have Tyler James coming up in about 6 or 7 minutes here on WSBT Radio to talk football recruiting. Your assessment of the North Carolina offense, I mean, they look pretty good on paper. You watch them on film. They've got some talent. I know they've got inexperience right now. That's probably holding them back. But is this the type of team, like in past years, that could try to keep up scoring-wise with the Notre Dame offense if they get rolling on Saturday? Or is it going to be difficult just because they are so banged up and have a lot of inexperience on that side of the football?
Well, Larry Fedora, I was looking at some stats today, and he has he's one of 12 coaches in the FBS active coaches that have averaged over 30 points a game this career. I think he's actually over 35. And you look at the number of games that he's been 400 yards or more, and it's staggering. But I kind of went back through game by game on North Carolina, and Surratt is up and down. Chaz Surratt is their freshman quarterback, redshirt freshman quarterback, and he had one game, I think, at Louisville, he was 12 of 14. Other games, he's been right around 50%. And within games, you see him have a great stretch and then a couple of bad plays. I think losing Austin Prohl really hurt them. That was a guy that was their leading receiver. That would be like Notre Dame losing Equanimeous St. Brown. I'm not saying Austin Prohl is as good as Equanimeous, but compared to their other receivers, that's kind of what you're, you know, the comparison there. And so when Prohl was no longer on the team, they seemed to really suffer. What happened in the Duke game and then in Georgia Tech, you know, their passing game was just really erratic. So, I mean, again, I think playing at home, they're going to have a little bit more of a comfort zone. They have Larry Fedora is a really good offensive mind. I think some of the kids that are filling in for the injured players will kind of settle into their roles a little bit more. But again, unless Notre Dame is sloppy with the ball and gives them extra possessions, I think Notre Dame will win this game, and it won't be 50-43 like it was at Notre Dame Stadium in 2014.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. Coming up next, Tyler James will join us for his IndyInsider.com recruiting update. A big-time cornerback that the Irish were interested in has picked a school. Did he pick the Irish? Find out when the IndyInsider.com recruiting update comes your way in just a couple of moments on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on 96.1 FM WSBT with the NDInsider.com recruiting update. Here's Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and the South Bend Tribune's Fighting Irish football recruiting insider, Tyler James.
It is time to talk Fighting Irish football recruiting, and I have to say this to kick off the segment, but the player, Tyler, that brought forth the soap theme to our segment, I see he's out for the season. Did you notice that?
Yeah. Yes, I did see that. That's unfortunate for Demetrius Robertson. I think he'd been playing pretty well for California, and he went out with an injury. So tough to see that for any guy. Obviously, we tend to keep an eye on the guys that kind of got it away from Notre Dame, and he was one of them. He was, I think, that just the lower body injury was all that I'd seen. I don't know if I'd seen specifically what he had hurt.
And just for people that don't remember, why did we come up with the soap theme because of Demetrius Robertson?
Demetrius had an interesting end of his recruitment, not really sure when he was going to make a decision and all that. Notre Dame sent a truck down to see him, a semi-truck. So his recruitment was one of the more interesting ones. So that was we were constantly tracking that one, and that was an inspiration for it.
And Eric giggled for every day since, I think, since we started playing that particular song. Well, Tyler, good to be with you. Cornerback Dante Burton made a decision. This was a guy Notre Dame was very interested in. He's picked a school. What direction did he go?
Yeah, Dante Burton committed to Wisconsin following an official visit up there this past weekend. That's not good news for Notre Dame because that seemed to be one of the options that Notre Dame was in the best position with. I believe there were some concerns there in terms of academics. He was waiting to get back his ACT score, and he recently got that back, and not long after that decided to commit to Wisconsin. So I'm not sure if Notre Dame could have made that work or not. Regardless, I mean, Notre Dame spent a pretty good amount of time recruiting him. He was pretty much Notre Dame was his favorite coming out of his visit back in July, and obviously the need for cornerbacks at Notre Dame is glaring. So to spend a bunch of time on a guy that you don't end up with the end is probably a tough pill to swallow. But they got to keep moving on and try to find some other options because it is only October, but the clock gets ticking pretty fast when you're without a cornerback for the second straight recruiting cycle in a row.
Yikes. Okay, so are there targets out there that are realistic, or are we looking at them having to expand their list a little bit?
I think there's a short list of targets that could be realistic. Kyler Gordon visited at the beginning of the season for the Temple game out of Washington, and he told me he enjoyed his visit very much. So I think they're a contender there. Washington, maybe the home state favorite. That's the only other school he's made a game visit to so far this season, and he told me this week that he doesn't have any other visits scheduled. Stanford and USC could also be some competition there. USC offered him after he visited Notre Dame, so it'll be interesting to watch what the relationship with him and the Trojans is like moving forward. But it's just, the longer his recruitment plays out, it's tough to see a kid from Washington weeks or months after his visit to Notre Dame ending up committing to Notre Dame. It doesn't usually work out that way. So if he were to get back on campus, you have to pay his own way because he already used his official visit. So I think they're in a decent spot, but the longer it goes, I think that spot becomes more tenuous. Kalen Gervin, the guy we talk about regularly after he reintroduced himself in terms of having interest in Notre Dame earlier this fall. We had talked about him coming and making two visits. He made an unofficial visit for the Georgia game, and he had said he wanted to make an official visit for the USC game, but now it appears he's working on a visit to Virginia Tech that same weekend, so that may not happen. Certainly, he could still end up making another visit to Notre Dame. There's three more home games after the USC game, certainly he could wait until December or something for an official visit. But that's another one. Obviously, you can never really feel too good about the situation there because he already backed away from his commitment once. Tariq Bracey is a guy that I think Notre Dame could be their best shot at getting a guy, but he hasn't visited yet. He's been eyeing an official visit for the USC game. 5'11", 170 pounds out of California. Doesn't have a ton of big-time offers. California, Utah, and Washington State representing the Pac-12. So there's not a big name competitor there for Notre Dame to beat out. So we'll see if he can get on campus. Notre Dame likes him enough to push for a commitment there, and that could be a name to watch. And then the other guy is Joe Wilkins Jr. He's looking at an official visit for the Wake Forest game. He's a wide receiver / cornerback. Some schools like him at receiver. Notre Dame likes him at corner. So we'll see when he gets on campus. I think kind of a similar situation as to Tariq Bracey. Is this kid the caliber that Notre Dame is willing to push for a commitment from? He's a 3-star recruit. Has offers from like Michigan State, North Carolina State, Kentucky, Iowa State. So those are two guys that definitely guys that are a notch down in my book from Kalen Gervin and Kyler Gordon, but guys that Notre Dame could end up in a good position for landing a commitment following their visits in the future.
South Bend Tribune's Tyler James talking Fighting Irish football recruiting. Miami, Ohio was in town last weekend. Not a big recruiting weekend, but did any recruits pick up offers from that weekend?
Yeah, a couple of younger recruits got some offers. Trent McDuffie, a 2019 cornerback out of Anaheim Servite High School, certainly a high school that Notre Dame's familiar with. That's where Equanimeous St. Brown played his high school football. He threw 5 games of his senior year. He had 17 tackles, 1 interception, 6 pass breakups. He also had 8 catches for 145 yards and 4 touchdowns. So can do a little bit of everything. 5'11", 175, so not a big size prospect. And that doesn't have many offers. His only other notable offer at this point was USC. So Notre Dame getting in early there. It's been pretty clear in the last couple weeks or months that California has been a spot that Notre Dame has been looking both in the 2018 and 2019 class with a lot of offers. And the other kid to get an offer is G. Scott Jr., a 2020 wide receiver, 19 receptions for 332 yards and 5 touchdowns in his first 4 games of his sophomore season. 24/7 Sports already ranks him as the number 9 receiver in that 2020 class. Has several big-time offers, UCLA, Oregon, USC, Utah, Colorado, already on his list. USC just offered him earlier this week, so after Notre Dame did. So two guys that I think we'll keep an eye on. I think Notre Dame could be in a good spot with moving forward, but obviously early in both those recruitments.
Tyler, Thomas Cooper is a defensive end prospect, and seems like beyond cornerback, that's kind of the one position that produces angst among recruit Knicks with Notre Dame's class. Now, I understand that he visited Stanford officially recently. Does that change the trajectory of where he's going to end up at all?
I don't know how it changes the trajectory. I do think that it's interesting that he did go ahead and make that official visit already. Notre Dame and Stanford seem to be the two real contenders here. He released a top five, and those included Princeton, Harvard, and Penn alongside those two schools. So we'll see if he actually visits those schools for official visits. So maybe that he has these official visits from Stanford and Notre Dame, he is getting closer to a decision and won't be having his recruitment running all the way till signing day. But we'll see how that plays out. Stanford is known to wait until January to have a lot of guys come in for official visits, so I also thought that was kind of interesting that they went ahead and had him coming on campus during the season. I think that's probably a pretty clear indication that they're not really worried about him getting into school. He's a good enough student. He actually has taken summer courses at Stanford previously, so they feel pretty confident that they can get him in school. So obviously an academically focused kid and would be an improvement for the defensive line for Notre Dame. So we'll be keeping an eye on him and seeing if the Stanford visit changes the opinion of Notre Dame, how those two stack up against each other. We'll see what kind of information we can get from him.
Tyler James talking Fighting Irish football recruiting on WSBT. Irish defensive tackle commit Jamie and Franklin. Tyler, he's dealing with some tough news right now.
Yeah, he shared recently on Twitter that his father, James, is dealing with a blood cancer, acute myeloid leukemia. So he's been asking for some help and some prayers from people. It's been kind of neat to see the community kind of embrace him. I know they've set up a website to called Meal Train to set up meals for the family, and I've seen pretty much most of the days in October and into late November have already been accounted for. So the community is really embracing that family and trying to help them out with Jamion's mom and his sister and himself. So they're also, I think you can donate money through that website as well. So if you're interested in that, you can check out Jamion's Twitter account and find a link to that. But we're certainly thinking about him, and hopefully some brighter days ahead for his dad. He can fight through this.
Well, Tyler, when we're in North Carolina this weekend, you're going to be doing a little scouting yourself. Who are you going to see on Friday night in North Carolina?
Yeah, Jameer Smith in Sanford Lee County High School. Notre Dame's one of two running back commits in Notre Dame's class. Had a productive season so far, so interested to see him in person. He's playing against a team that's 1-5, so I think he'll probably have his way with the team. And he's been regularly producing 200-plus yard games this season, so expecting another big night for him.
Tyler, who would you say right now from the Notre Dame committed group for the class of 2018 are having the most important, or if you want to say biggest, high school football senior seasons? Are there a couple of guys that are really playing outstanding football that have caught your eye right now?
Well, I think you got to start with Phil Dracovic. I think him coming back from the thumb injury last season and maybe being downgraded in some scouts' eyes in the off season, he certainly come out and continue to play at the high level that he has pretty much his whole career at Pine Richmond High School. So seeing him do that and lead a team against some tough competition and put up some good numbers is nice to see. Also, Kevin Austin, who I mentioned last week, was a guy we kind of wanted to see this last weekend, or last Thursday after we had talked on the show. He went out and caught 7 passes for 329 yards and 5 touchdowns and set the Broward County record for receiving yards in a game, and they know how to play football down there in Broward County, so that's a pretty impressive stat. He's had some games where he hasn't done a ton, but had some certainly a game like that where he's really carried the offense. And then I think also a guy like Micah Jones has had a pretty good season. Hadn't put up a lot of numbers throughout his high school career. We certainly have seen his size, and he's an impressive-looking prospect, but to see that turn into some production on the field has been pretty nice to see as well.
All right,
Tyler. Go ahead.
No, Eric, I thought you were done. Go right ahead.
Just Marquis Stepp is trying to get a fan vote. What's all that about?
Yeah, he's one of 32 players up for 2 spots in the Under Armour All-America game. They do a fan voting. It's at amfam.com/fanvote. You can check out, you get the link at Marquis Stepp's Twitter account. But he's trying to get in the game, and it's sort of a voting system, 2 weeks for the first round and then advance, and then it's kind of a bracket, so eventually he can hopefully get in the game there. And Marquis Stepp is also in that, alongside Thomas Booker, is one of the guys that Notre Dame's recruiting that's in the bracket, and same with Kyler Gordon as well.
Eric's really good at that dramatic pause. He got me that time. So sorry about that, Eric. All right, Tyler, what type of stories are you working on for upcoming editions of the South Bend Tribune and also IndyInsider.com?
Yeah, our Indy Insider intern tomorrow will have a story about cornerbacks recruiting, kind of breaking down every guy that they're looking at right now. And then also kind of a look at the talent in North Carolina. It's a bit of an underrated state and has a lot of good players there. Notre Dame's recruited there pretty regularly, so looking at that a little bit more in tomorrow's newspaper.
And hopefully updates on the barbecue in Chapel Hill later next week?
Absolutely.
Good deal. Tyler, always appreciate the time. You can follow Tyler on Twitter for the latest Notre Dame football recruiting news. T. James, NDI on Twitter. And, of course, in the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com. Have a great trip to Chapel Hill. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you there.
That is Tyler James. Always with the latest information on Fighting Irish football recruiting. Some good insight on the cornerback position right now as the Irish try to hit the jackpot at that position for the class of 2018. It is 13 minutes in front of the top of the hour. We're expecting to hear from Fighting Irish head coach Brian Kelly in the next little bit. And will he offer an update on starting quarterback Brandon Wimbush? Is Ian Book going to start against North Carolina, or will he keep that information close to the vest? We'll find out coming up in just a couple of moments as Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues, brought to you by Budweiser and Sport Clips on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM, WSBT.
This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Nick Wisher, 12-yard touchdown catch.
On Michiana's Sports Leader.
Heat's coming and sacked out of bounds by Dalen Hayes.
96.1 FM, WSBT.
Breaking into open field inside the 20, inside the 10, and standing up is Josh Adams.
Darren Pritchett back in our WSBT studios. Sports Beat presented by Budweiser and Sport Clips. This is your Thursday evening edition of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. After our program, Caveman Corner at 7 o'clock. The Brian Kelly Radio Show live at 7:30 from O'Rourke's at Eddy Street Commons. And then at 8:30, it's the National Football League. Very interesting matchup tonight. The New England Patriots at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. All those shows right here on 96.1 FM, WSBT. In a matter of moments, you should be able to hear from Fighting Irish head coach Brian Kelly. He is scheduled to meet the media any second, and we will find out, hopefully, an update on starting quarterback Brandon Wimbush. Wimbush in the game against Miami, Ohio on Saturday, a game in which the Irish won 52-17. The junior suffered a grade one strain to his right foot. Now, that's the mildest form of an injury, and it has to do with a muscle tendon strain. Now, on Tuesday, we know that Ian Book, the backup quarterback, took the reps with the first team. Brandon had a boot on that right foot. The plan was for the boot to come off yesterday. There was the hope he would be running around yesterday, but we have not heard from Brian Kelly since yesterday's practice. Of course, since we heard from him on the teleconference on Wednesday, they practiced Wednesday night. They're just wrapping up practice as we speak. So in the coach's eyes, they probably know who the starting quarterback is. It's just whether Brian's going to pass along that information to us and to North Carolina. Will it be Brandon Wimbush or will it be Ian Book? So Coach Kelly's comments are coming up in a couple of moments. We'll bring them to you as they happen on 96.1 FM WSBT. Couple of minutes in front of the top of the hour. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. We're still waiting for Brian Kelly to step to the podium for his Thursday comments following practice. A couple other storylines. If you're a fantasy football player, do you have Rob Gronkowski in your starting lineup tonight? Well, I'm not telling you what to do, but I'm just going to pass along. Mike Reese is the Patriots beat reporter for ESPN, and he is reporting that Gronkowski is out for tonight's game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, apparently due to a hip injury. So again, don't blame me if you take him out of the starting lineup and he plays. I'm just passing along that one of the ESPN Patriots beat reporters, they are reporting, according to a source, Gronkowski likely out against the Buccaneers. That does not come from the New England Patriots. Major League Baseball postseason, top of the fifth inning in Houston, and the Astros have a 4-2 lead on the Red Sox. Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman hit solo home runs in the first inning off Chris Sale. And Marwin Gonzalez hit a two-run double in the fourth inning to put the Astros back in front of the Red Sox by a score of 4-2. Steven Strasburg will start for the Nationals against the Cubs in game one of their divisional series in the nation's capital tomorrow night at 7:31. Top of the hour. Here comes CBS Sports on WT South Bend. Darren Pritchett back in our WSBT studios. Let's go to the Goog. Here's Brian Kelly live, his Thursday comments to the media.
Okay. Who's ready? No, it was, we brought it out at the, after we made a change there. Part of the plan was to make certain that we invested in the players that we had on hand, and it wasn't going to be, 15 players, 18 players. We're going to invest in the players that were here and develop our players. So I think we made that shift philosophically when I made a change last year through the season, and then we just continued philosophically to when I met with Mike that we wanted to make sure that we developed all of our players.
You guys have to be productive, right?
No question.
Just going to throw them out there. Right. You look at your defensive line, and virtually, they can go from man to man and say one has improved.
Right. I think that there is there's a couple things. One is that I think we did a really good job of finding what their level of competency was and really playing to that. You know, there are first down and second down players, there are third down players, and I think as coaches we didn't, say, all right, this guy can't play. I mean, we looked for reasons to play guys and find out what their skill set is and develop. And look, we recruited them. We scholarship them. It's our responsibility to develop them, get them on the field, and find the skill sets that can help us win.
When you play that many, I mean, it's got to be good for morale. You keep them engaged.
Weight room. There's a sense that when they get in there that, they're going to really look to make gains in the weight room. There's great morale. And there's really the biggest thing is there's autonomy, and that autonomy is that they decide that they're going to make great gains, and when they make that decision, you've got something going.
Brian, what's the status of Brandon Bush?
He practiced today, did some good things, so I think we'll go day to day and then make the decision on game day. He would.
No, but if Brandon can't.
Well, he's going to be able to. If he doesn't start.
He would be able to back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's going to be able to do something. Absolutely.
Do you have any decision on whether CJ Collins, do you want to still
redshirt
him, or do you want to activate him?
Well, we brought him up with us with the intent that, we think that he can contribute. So our eye and focus is on getting him involved in the running teams and special teams and seeing if we can get him involved in our offense. He's a skilled player. He's got some talents. We hope to play eight more games, so that's a lot of season left.
So you just want to play him?
Yeah, we do. We practiced with him. We wouldn't bring him up with us if we didn't feel like he was ready to play physically, and that he didn't have the skill set necessary for us to win with him. So our intentions are, we'll see how the game plays out, but he's with us to contribute this year and help us win.
And what is the status of
Much better. I think Josh is, Josh had a good day today. I'd say if I was rating him in terms of guys that, coming back after ankle sprains, Tony looked really good today. I think he's, in terms of him and Dexter, I think, Dexter is going to be able to play. But I think Tony's probably a little bit ahead of him right now. And, you still have Josh. He'll be the starter and Dion. And we've got CJ some reps there as well. So we've got plenty of guys. Look, the team we're playing, God bless them. And I've been in their shoes. They've lost a ton of starters. I mean, we are healthy. I mean, yeah, we got an ankle here and a bump here and a bruise here, but we're a healthy football team. We've got I'm happy where we're at. I'll tell you, we've been in a lot worse straits than we are right now. Well, I would say the same things, Pete. He's very accurate with the football. He's got a good grasp of the offense. And he elevates the play of the guys around him. They all know that he is a really good quarterback. And I think, in the times that he's played, real football in the spring game, he was really effective moving his squad. And every time he's gotten a chance to scrimmage with his unit, he's been effective moving the ball. So it's what we thought. He's had a good week and been really effective.
Nothing that would suggest, this is different for him than
the
spring game?
No. No, I think a real good grasp of the offense, maybe a more solid grasp of the offense even than, obviously, with more time with us than the spring. And again, I think I mentioned this on Tuesday. He gets a lot of reps. We give our second quarterback a good deal of the reps. So he's gotten a lot of work. He knows the offense pretty good.
Referencing, you had mentioned something you said on Sunday about the Missouri, sort of personality test that you did in the spring.
Yeah.
What was sort of the genesis for that? Is that something that yourself being brought up or were aware of?
It was something that I wanted to help in leadership development, and it's something that I had done previously, years back, in terms of helping our leaders find what their strengths were. I had met with the captains a couple of times, and they all had similar questions. What are my leadership qualities? What am I good at? And so I've always had this leadership test as kind of a go-to for, kind of vetting out what their strengths are, their personality strengths as a leader. And so I went to that, and it really kind of helped them know where their strengths were and allowed us a discussion point as to what they could cultivate and go to for their type of leader.
You've done that here before.
Okay, we'll cut it off right there. I think we've jumped the shark. As we're talking about some of the testing that went on during the offseason. So, Brandon Wimbush practiced today, still listed day-to-day, a game-time decision. We'll kind of recap everything. Let's take care of a break. We're a little behind in taking care of some business. We have Andrew Carter coming up. He will be our opposing press box interview tonight, North Carolina beat reporter for the News and Observer. So we'll recap BK's comments coming up as Sports Beat continues, brought to you by Budweiser and Sport Clips on 96.1 FM WSBT. Along with Sean Stiers, I'm Darren Pritchett. See right on the button, Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser and Sport Clips. Well, the last time we talked to Andrew Carter, we were getting set for the Notre Dame-North Carolina game that had to be moved.
Wasn't there a flood or something going on?
Yeah. And, of course, a month later, North Carolina's cutting down the nets, winning a national championship. And now Andrew rejoins us to talk about the North Carolina Tar Heel football team that is off to a 1-4 start this year, but they welcome the Fighting Irish to Chapel Hill coming up on Saturday. Andrew, good to speak with you once again. It's Darren. How are you this evening?
Well, I'm doing great, Darren. Thank you so much for having me.
Greatly appreciate your time, as always. We've heard the storyline, Andrew. 13 North Carolina players lost for the season. I've read 19 guys hurt. Which side of the football has been hurt the most by these injuries?
Definitely the offensive side. You know, this was already going to be a challenging set of circumstances, a rebuilding year for this offense after everything that lost last year, losing Mitch Trubisky, losing, the top three receivers that they had. They lost their top three rushers. They lost probably their two best offensive linemen from last year, all to either, you know, leaving school early or just graduating. And so I think they lost something like 90% of their production from last year. And then, like you mentioned, they've had a ton of injuries on that side of the ball, especially they've been decimated at wide receiver. They lost their three best receivers from last season, and then they've lost another four. Another guy's going to come out today and be announced as a loss for the season. So they've lost four receivers in five games. So at that position, they've just been decimated. They've had some injury problems up front on the offensive line. And again, offensively, this was always going to be a challenging year, a rebuilding kind of year. And then with the injury situation, they just don't have, you know, nearly what they expected. But defensively, it hasn't been a picnic either. I mean, they lost their starting middle linebacker for the season, Andre Smith, for an injury. One of their best defensive tackles, Jalen Dalton, he's not out for the season, but he hasn't played since week two against Louisville. So on that side of the ball, they've been hurt too.
When you look at all those guys, and I mean, as you just said, it's a pretty long list. Who's maybe the most significant out of that list of players that they're missing right now?
Probably Austin Prohl. He was going to be a guy who was expected to lead this offense, both as an emotional leader, a vocal leader with that position, and just kind of, you know, produce too. They lost so many playmakers from last year, and he was the only guy returning at a skill position who did really much of anything of consequence last year. They also lost Thomas Jackson, their number two returning receiver from last year. He made some plays. Those two guys were the only guys coming back who made double-digit catches a season ago. But again, Prohl was really expected to be a guy that would provide some emotional leadership, be kind of a vocal guy who could kind of keep things together, and he's gone. So I would say him on offense, and certainly Andre Smith. You know, the middle linebacker position is often referred to as a quarterback of the defense, and he's gone too. I mean, he went down when these guys played against Louisville in week two, an especially bad day for him because he came into that game saying how UNC was really going to contain Lamar Jackson and do a great job against him, and they did not do that. And not only that, but he suffered a season-ending knee injury. So I would say those two guys, they lost basically their two leaders coming into the year on offense and defense.
Andrew, the Irish have only faced one dual-threat quarterback so far this year, a true dual-threat, and that was Brian Lewerke of Michigan State. Chance Surratt fits that particular mold. Two-part question. When you look at Surratt's game, how could he hurt the Irish? And if I could ask a follow-up question, Brandon Harris is an interesting guy, highly acclaimed down at LSU, didn't work out. He's only thrown 42 passes for Carolina. Why has it not worked in Chapel Hill as well?
Well, I'll answer the first one of those, the first part of that question first. I mean, Surratt, you know, he is kind of a dual threat guy. I think that's a fair description, but I think he's much more of a threat, you know, kind of running the ball and his mobility at this point than he is as a passer. I think the offense has been really limited in terms of his limitations with throwing the deep ball. He doesn't really have a great arm at this point. He's just kind of limited in what he can do going down the field. UNC has really kept the playbook very basic and simple. They haven't taken a whole lot of chances. I think even if he was equipped to make those kind of throws down the field, you know, the kind that Mitch Trubisky really excelled at making last year, the ones that Marquise Williams the past couple of years before that did so well, he wouldn't have anyone to throw the ball to anyway. No, even if that was a big part of Chaz's arsenal, it's like, who does he have to throw the ball to? So, UNC is using a lot of shorter passing routes, a lot of, you know, screens, a lot of passes in the flat. It's more of a kind of east-west passing game than it is a vertical passing game at this point. So kind of one of his dual threats has been really limited just based on the circumstances. And as for Brandon Harris, he did start the season. He played the first game against Cal, didn't play especially well. He came in week two against Louisville. He actually played really well the second half of that game. And that was a game that Chad Surratt actually started that game and then suffered a minor injury right before halftime and didn't play the second half. And Brandon played well, to his credit. Didn't throw any interceptions. He made good decisions. He looked really comfortable. And then since then, he hasn't really gotten a whole lot of chances to play. And last week, when UNC was struggling down at Georgia Tech in the game that UNC lost 33-7, you know, they did put in Brandon Harris for a play, or for a series, rather. And his first drop-back pass, he throws an interception. That's just the kind of thing that infuriates the coaches, obviously. I would be surprised if we saw him much at all the rest of the way, barring any kind of injury situation. I think at this point, you know, UNC understands that it's not going to win the Coastal Division this year in the ACC. It's not going to compete for a conference championship. It's not going to an upper-level bowl game. And I think at this point it makes a lot of sense for them to kind of, you know, build for the future. And obviously Harris has the rest of the season in terms of his eligibility, and Chad Surratt has three more years after this year. So clearly he's the future, and I think, you know, they're looking at it that way. Just, you know, what makes sense to kind of build for the future, and, you know, certainly Chad starting the rest of the way and gaining experience, I think, makes the most sense.
Listen to what you're saying there, Andrew. I mean, is this an offense that really has an identity right now, or are they just sort of piecemeal, grab-bagging, trying to figure out what works just because of all these issues they have?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they have an identity just in that, you know, their scheme is well-established and what they want to do is so well-established. And, you know, Larry Fedora, the head coach, this is his sixth season, and he's well-known for his offensive scheme. It's an up-tempo, no-huddle spread. They've been doing the same thing for the past six seasons. So, they have an identity. They just can't really achieve it. I mean, you know, they don't have the bodies. They don't have the guys. You know, again, up front, the offensive line's been banged up. We've been through the receiver situation. And then they're starting a quarterback right now who has started four college games. You know, a guy who's still very much learning how to be a starter at this level. And so they have an identity, but whether they can really achieve it is a question. And to this point, they just, you know, they really haven't.
Andrew Carter is our guest, beat reporter for the Tar Heels, for the News and Observer. And I have a feeling you probably partially answered my next question in your last comments. But for the five games, Andrew, the Tar Heels have led in the fourth quarter. Is there a common theme to the team's poor finishes to games?
You know, basically, I feel like UNC has just kind of run out of gas in these fourth quarters, especially last week at Georgia Tech. Really, the third quarter last week was the quarter of doom for UNC. And they've had a quarter of doom in each one of their losses. Now it's the fourth quarter against Cal and Louisville and Duke. And last week it was the third quarter, like I said. Really, UNC has had problems on third down on both sides. On offense, it's not really doing a great job of converting third downs. And on defense, they've been one of the worst teams in the country at stopping other teams on third down. So when a defense doesn't get off the field on third down, obviously they're on the field longer. The offense, you know, the other team's offense is, racking up the time of possession. And I think UNC is, you know, they've had really a fatigue problem late in games, defensively especially. They've just had an inability to stop other teams. I think they've worn down. Again, you saw that last week against Georgia Tech, another team that really likes to run the ball. UNC was just kind of exhausted by the end of that game. So I think that's kind of been the constant theme, that UNC has played well enough to stay in games for two quarters, two and a half, three quarters, and then by the end of it, it just really wears down.
You might have just answered this, but obviously Georgia Tech runs a different kind of running attack with its option and all. But if Notre Dame lines up and just plays smash mouth with the big bodies that they have up front, does Carolina have what it takes to try to withstand that?
Yeah, you know, I think they can hang in there for a while. I think they could do a decent job for a half or, you know, for three quarters maybe. But, you know, the question is whether, you know, if it's a game on Saturday, if it's competitive, if the score is close in the fourth quarter, you know, can UNC actually muster up enough energy and enough execution to really kind of stick in there and stay in the game? They haven't done that to this point in any game. I mean, literally every game that they've played, even against ODU, Old Dominion, which was kind of out of hand. UNC won that game going away. But still, even in that game, you know, ODU was at its best in the fourth quarter, albeit against some of UNC's reserves. So if that trend changes on Saturday, it's literally going to be the first time this season that UNC will have put together a strong second half and a strong fourth quarter. We just haven't seen that at all. You know, actually, UNC played pretty well against that triple option last week, with the exception of 260-plus yard rushing plays that they gave up. You know, Georgia Tech ran for 403 yards, I think was the total, which, you know, that's not necessarily surprising against an offense that just runs the ball the entire game. But UNC actually kept it in check, but they gave up about 130 yards on two plays. And that's been the other reason why this defense has really struggled, is its inability to stop the other team's big play. I think UNC already, through five games this year, it's almost given up as many 40-yard plays as it gave up all of last year. You know, it's been one of the worst defenses in the country in terms of limiting the big play. So, you know, those have really killed UNC too. Those, you know, those two or three times a game where there's a complete breakdown, they've really been exploited there as well.
Andrew, you're on a radio show in the heart of Chicago Bears country, so I got to ask you about Mitchell Trubisky. You saw him play down in Chapel Hill, starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears Monday night against the Minnesota Vikings. Do you have the expectation in time that this could be an above-average quarterback in the National Football League? And I hate to say franchise quarterback, because there are just so few of those in the National Football League.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think stuff like that is kind of really difficult to project. But, yeah, I definitely feel like he has, you know, all the tools, as I say. I mean, he has everything that you would want in one of those kind of guys. I mean, he does everything you want on the field. He's very accurate. He has a strong arm. He's pretty mobile. He's smart. He can read a defense. You know, he's good at kind of shifting his eyes around and keeping defenders guessing in terms of where he's going to go with the ball. You know, so he has all the natural physical tools, I think, that anybody would want in an NFL quarterback. I think the question for me is just how quickly he can find success. I mean, what's his learning curve going to be? He only started 13 games in college. You know, that's been something that a lot of people have been harping about and wondering why that's the case. UNC expected to have him another year. No one really expected when he started last season that he was going to have such a high level of success so quickly and be able to leave after just one season as a starter. So that kind of caught people off guard. But yeah, I mean, I think in time he has everything that, you know, a quarterback needs to be successful. I think, you know, the scouts really fell in love with his mechanics, you know, with all the measurables and all that kind of thing. And so clearly when you watch his film, when you study him, you see why people thought so highly of him. But again, I mean, I think it's only natural that there's going to be some kind of a learning curve. After only starting 13 college games, I wouldn't expect him to come in and light the world on fire in the NFL. But I think he has everything there, again, to be successful.
Andrew, real quick, it looked like this long-awaited NCAA academic case was finally going to be, we were going to finally get some resolution to it, but it sounds like that's not going to happen. Can you kind of update exactly what is going on with that right now?
Yeah, so, you know, I reported earlier this morning about 9:30 or so that, you know, the announcement was supposed to come out tomorrow. And, you know, I stand by that. You know, there were some emails sent out from the NCAA to various parties involved in this case that basically said just that, said that the report was going to be released tomorrow at noon. There was going to be a media teleconference following that at 1 o'clock. And basically, as I understand it from talking with some folks today, UNC basically asked the NCAA to kind of hold off. UNC tomorrow is going to announce a huge campus-wide fundraising initiative, a $4.3 billion fundraising campaign. A lot of top donors are in town in Chapel Hill right now. There's a lot of important people, a lot of upper echelon alums. They have events scheduled all throughout the weekend. I imagine that the university's leadership was going to be tied up with other activities tomorrow related to this fundraising kickoff. And so it sounds like both parties kind of agreed to hold off on this for a little bit. I mean, I don't know when it's going to come out now. I would guess maybe Monday or Tuesday, certainly next week sometime, I think, is when it's going to come out. But it definitely was set to be released tomorrow before UNC kind of asked this thing to be postponed.
Brother. Well, it's been a long time coming. What's a couple of more days, yeah. I guess. Well, Andrew, I tell you what, I guess we'll see you in South Bend January 13th when the defending national champions come back to Purcell Pavilion to take on Bonzi Colson and the Irish.
That'd be a fun game. I look forward to it.
Yeah, we look forward to meeting you. We've had you on the program a couple of times, and we'll be sure to say hello and hope you have an enjoyable game to write about down in Chapel Hill on Saturday, the Irish and the Tar Heels at 3:30. And as always, greatly appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you very, very soon.
Always happy to come on. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Thank you so much. Andrew Carter does a great job covering the Tar Heels down in the North Carolina area, of course, for the news and Observer, the Irish and the Tar Heels. That'll be fun in basketball. January 13th. Old Purcell will be rocking.
No kidding.
When the Heels come to town. Always appreciate Andrew's time. It is North Carolina and Notre Dame Saturday. Kickoff at 3:30 here on WSBT Radio. Pre-game coverage starts at 9. I'll be joined, of course, by Sean and Eric for Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat. We're on the air from noon until 2:30 on Saturday to break it all down and say if, and, buts a whole bunch more. And again, if you're just joining us, Brandon Wimbush, game time decision. He is still listed as day-to-day, but practice today. How much, we don't know. Brian Kelly didn't tell us that. He just practiced.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what that means? To be continued. It is 14 minutes in front of the top of the hour at WSBT. 8 minutes in front of 7 o'clock, K-Men Corner coming up at the top of the hour. Brian Kelly Radio Show live at 7:30. The National Football League at 8:30. Patriots at Buccaneers. Again, the report. If you're a fantasy football player, apparently Rob Gronkowski, the Patriots tight end, will not play tonight. Again, that's the report. We have not heard from the Patriots as of yet. Major League Baseball postseason, the Houston Astros have knocked around Chris Sale, and that's not good news for the Red Sox, in my opinion.
No. Nope.
After Sale, there's a drop-off in starting pitching, and the Astros are right now rolling. They lead the Red Sox 7-2 as Houston comes to the plate in the seventh inning. Altuve, Bregman homered in the first inning. Marwin Gonzalez, a big two RBI hit in the fourth inning. And the Astros have taken control behind Justin Verlander at Dallas Keuchel going tomorrow.
I tell you what, starting pitchers have not done so well.
In the
first wild card game, they were obviously awful. Yesterday, Zach Greinke, I mean, he can't even get out of the fourth inning.
And they had to use Robbie Ray, another starting pitcher, to help
in the
get
common,
to the divisional series.
The common theme seems to be these are all first-time starters, all first-time playoff starting pitchers as well. I heard somebody talking about it earlier today, like Luis Severino for the Yankees was saying he just couldn't slow himself down. There was too much adrenaline going, the whole thing, and
Irvin Santana.
Justin Verlander has obviously been around a little bit more than any of these guys, and so far
and
he's
cranky.
Had the Santana might have, but
can't remember.
It's been so long now that it was probably back when he was with the Angels, if he would have.
Could be. Well, it's been a bizarre start to the postseason. A lot of runs, 11-8. The Diamondbacks beat the Rockies last night. And A.J. Pollock, the former Notre Dame star, 2-for-5, had a big 2 RBI triple in the eighth inning. And former South Bend Silverhawk Archie Bradley, a 2 RBI triple in the seventh, the first reliever in postseason history to record a triple, and that was just his second career hit.
Ernie Johnson's still trying to figure out if that's in the gap or not, I think. He's, Ernie is great in the studio doing NBA stuff, but it's hard throwing a guy in there who hasn't done a whole lot of play-by-play in his career.
As you know, my friend, it's who you know in some of those big jobs.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what.
Well, and that's obviously a network that doesn't do a ton of baseball, and he's their full-time guy, so.
I don't mean this to be mean, but having been around minor league baseball and being around a lot of people in the Midwest League and listening to a lot of baseball, minor league baseball broadcasters, for the most part, are better than the majors. It's just they have the connections to get there. There's
exactly
a lot of really talented minor league guys that are better than some of the guys you hear, but it's not very easy to move up the chain. And by the way, Steven Strasburg will start for the Nationals against the Cubs in Game 1 tomorrow. That's right. K-Men Corner coming up in just a couple of moments. Sports be brought to you by Budweiser and Sport Clips. Again, Brian Kelly says Brandon Wimbush practiced today, but day-to-day and a game-time decision. Top of the hour, WSBT South Bend.